Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
Hello!
And it is our goal to podcast.
Too bad we never met that goal.
And kind of talk about birds. Okay, so first, number one, last time on the podcast, I very reluctantly read a letter from an angry listener.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. An email came in from that listener, and in the subject line, it said, apologies?
Right.
And then my mailbox app went nuts.
Yeah, sure it did.
No, seriously. That sounds plausible. No, if you have mailbox, what is it, mailbox beta?
Sure.
It went a little nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And it started automatically archiving and deleting some of my emails.
Sure.
And so I went back in because I was like, you know, if they apologize.
Sounds like a really amazing coincidence.
No, it's not. I lost a lot of... I have a contract from Audubon I need to sign that's in there somewhere that I have to find.
Sure.
But anyway, they sent one. I'm sorry I didn't read it before it got deleted by mailbox.
Apologies that you suck so much.
Anyway, so if you send an apology,
you need to apologize. Let me just be clear. I don't think he needed to apologize for the email. As I stated previously, I wasn't being sarcastic. I agreed with the email that was sent.
I know, but now I just feel bad that we're here.
Yeah.
So basically, what
I feel very bad that we're here. Let's be clear about that.
So basically, what I want to say is if you don't like the podcast, please don't listen to us. And if you feel so much like you have to...
If you do like the podcast, please don't listen to us.
But, you know, I don't want to know. I do appreciate hearing things like somebody sent something last week about sound levels. I forwarded that to you.
Yep.
But
and the problem was basically that you keep moving back and forth, which is something that I point out to you as we're podcasting.
I'm trying right now. I'm just focusing on the mic so hard right now.
Do you need me to turn around so you can see the little flashing light? Will that capture your attention?
That might. That actually might.
All right.
So anyway, I've set my beer down in front of the mic to try and focus me. I'm not drinking scotch. I'm drinking a pumpkin ale.
You know, you say that, and I'm going to break the fourth wall here and point out that you actually have two. You have a beer bottle and a glass.
This podcast might go long. Okay, so speaking...
That's fine, because I can go elsewhere. I can just leave this running.
Speaking of the fourth wall,
yeah.
We have someone that wants to interview us.
Right.
And they asked to sit in on a podcast.
That would be weird.
I know. And I said, I don't think you want to do that because we basically just sit down. This is not NPR. We don't edit anything. There's very rarely we might stop and I'll say, hey, let's maybe go back a little bit and start recording because I really don't want to incriminate that person I just incriminated.
Right. Or I need to delete this email that was sent to us.
Oh, no. I really feel bad because the person apologized and then I didn't get a chance to read it because mailbox went funky. Anyway, don't resend the apology if you're sorry. We get it. We'll never read bad emails on here again because I don't want to be here. Anyway, I'm having a pumpkin ale. And somebody wants to sit in on the podcast and I just don't know how to...
I can't imagine that would be a good idea. I don't know what you would get out of it other than sitting in our dining room and watching the two of us.
Well, that's why I told him. I was like, this is not NPR. And he's like, that's great. That's what I want to see. And I'm just like, this is basically us working out issues in our marriage
while we
talk about birds.
There's nothing
that
goes on. We have a microphone. It's plugged into my laptop. We are having this conversation.
It's like, we could totally fake that photo for you if you want.
Yeah.
Maybe he just wants to drink with us.
It's like, that's fine. But I would not be able to, you know... The person would have to be involved with the podcast. I would not be.
It would just be weird to have someone sitting here.
I would basically take that as an invitation to make a lot of jokes about who wants to interview us.
Is it Minnesota Monthly?
Maybe.
I think it's a magazine.
Basically take that as an invitation to make a lot of terrible jokes about Minnesota Monthly, which is a very nice magazine that has been very kind to me in the past.
They've been very kind to me too.
But if someone was sitting here and chose not to respond to what I was saying, I would take that as a green light to make a lot of jokes about Minnesota Monthly.
Well, the really interesting thing is that they're talking to me, and I keep referencing both of us, like, you know, asking about having to be at the podcast and or scheduling an interview. I keep saying, well, let me check with Bill, blah, blah, blah. He's just basically scheduled the interview with me, and I'm just like, do you not know that there are two people that do this podcast?
Sure.
Are there not other birding?
I'm here almost every night, but...
Well, he's going to meet me for coffee during the day, but I'm just like...
Here's a thought. Maybe nobody else can hear me Maybe this is like a Grease 2 situation where you are singing to yourself and you're winning the talent show competition.
It all seems so unfair. Just when I found you, I lost you.
Well, you have to keep our love alive.
Okay, I promise.
Wouldn't that be amazing if, like, we played these podcasts, like, so, like, in the third act, you play these, it was just your voice, and we're like, these long, like, and like,
it'd be like,
I was already dead. That would be crazy.
Like Garfield without the Garfield
it
captions.
It would.
Okay, so we do have another email regarding a podcast.
Two emails? I'm seeing double.
Well, we've technically had three emails since the last one, but okay. So this is from Arthur Maslowski. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But it's about feathered dinosaurs and preening.
Yeah, he
said, could you sound more interesting?
No, that's fantastic. I wish I got emails with that subject line.
Dinosaurs and preening?
Yeah.
So if you're that's cool like me, you get cool stuff
Arthur,
like that.
Arthur, good job. That's an amazing subject line. Continue.
I was listening to your podcast, and I heard you call out for information on preening dinosaurs. Why are you laughing?
This is a sex email, I can just tell already.
The fact of the matter is, a lot of dinosaurs had feathers. Okay, and for those who are just coming into this podcast, I had a question because, you know, dinosaurs apparently had feathers and teeth. And what I wanted to know was, how the heck did they maintain those feathers? Because if you're around birds or if you have a bird, they preen their feathers with their beak and their preen gland. And it's like, I don't... Not that I'm doubting that dinosaurs had feathers. It's just like, how do they maintain those?
You just doubt that dinosaurs existed. You just think that there were ducks the size of Brontosaurus wandering the earth.
Sometimes I do.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do.
That would be fantastic,
frankly. It would be great, yeah. Okay, so... Arthur says, the fact of the matter is, a lot of dinosaurs had feathers. How they took care of those feathers, we just don't know, and probably can't know, but I feel safe to assume that they must have had the ability to care for them in some way. Perhaps bathing in water or dust was sufficient. Perhaps they used their teeth in some capacity. We don't even know when the preen gland evolved. Perhaps some feathered dinosaurs didn't even have them. That's crazy to me. We don't know when... birds got their preen.
Maybe the birds just look like shit, frankly. Maybe they were just, you know, maybe they were terrible looking birds. Maybe they looked like they were doing the walk of shame on a Sunday morning, and maybe they just like,
hey,
look
that's
like
the
crap.
That's the strut of pride, or at least it was for me in college.
Well,
I remember
dreams
like,
someday
I'd like to do the walk of shame.
I love the assertion that, okay, we don't know how this happened, but it probably happened. And it's like, yeah, well, no kidding.
So
it's like, yeah, well, it goes back to the whole bumblebee, you know, bumblebees can't fly, but they do. It's like, well, no shit. That's because we don't understand how the aerodynamics of a bumblebee works.
Yes.
It's not because the bumblebees have willed themselves to fly. It's because we don't know something.
Okay. Well, Arthur goes on to talk about the coexistence of modern birds with former dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
But he also
and
says...
women in leopard print bikinis.
Stop. Don't do that to poor Arthur. So he says, you might be interested in the work of Emily Willoughby, who specializes in illustrating feathered dinosaurs, prehistoric birds, and living birds as well.
Great.
Her artwork really blurs the line between what defines a bird from a dinosaur and will convince you that if you ever actually saw a velociraptor, it wouldn't be the monsters from Jurassic Park, but instead an animal you would digiscope and add to your life list. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. So you can check her out at www.emilywillaby.com. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a raptor from Jurassic Park or an Emily Willoughby, I'd totally digiscope that shit.
Sure. I would like to suggest an additional scientific volume you can purchase. It's called Billionaire Triceratops Seduced Me on His Corporate Jet.
I think we've talked about dinosaur porn on here before. I'm pretty sure there was a dare that I make one of the titles of our podcast Dinosaur Porn.
I think we did that already, didn't we?
We did. That's what I'm telling you. You've already talked about the gay Triceratops.
Okay. Well, that's
series.
Okay. So that's my scientific novel. I'm going to submit it to Audubon.
Well, since we're here, I kind of thought about making tonight's theme all about birders are just dirty.
Sure, why not? We've talked about this before.
No, I mean
privately.
It is. It's just gotten out of control. Okay. Okay. First
okay.
Of all,
I am. Biting my tongue so hard right now. I'm really curious as to see where you're going.
Okay. So, apparently the American Bird Expo happened this past weekend. What is so funny about that? And you just totally bonked the microphone, by the way.
Expo. Okay, continue.
Expo. How is that funny? There are a lot of things at Expo.
Explain to you.
It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
So apparently at the American Bird Conservation, American Bird Expo, I saw several photos go up for, are you ready?
Sure.
Cornhole for conservation. Oh,
boy.
It's like, there's this game you play with a kind of a wooden ramp with holes
it's
in it.
It's a beanbag toss.
It's a game
in the Midwest where it's basically skee ball, except you have a beanbag that you toss into
some holes. Places call it bags.
Some people call it, in Midwest, where we grew up, it's called cornhole.
Minnesota calls it cornhole.
Yes, they do.
There were a bunch of park rangers the other night. We were having a party. It's like, let's cornhole. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So
that's
the great thing is that words never change their meaning, like gay and cock and...
What other meaning is cock had?
Rooster.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So, but I'm just saying that's the amusing part of being alive is that words never change
their meaning. Yeah, but, you know, I had a librarian named Gay when I was in middle school. Poor woman. So we have the whole cornhole thing.
I'm going to cut that out. I'm going to start doing intros for this show, and I'm going to cut that clip out. I want everybody who's listening to this, if you are a musician at all, I want you to cut that clip out and do like a disco remix of Serious
Auto-tune, this whole cornhole thing.
Wait, let's just get a clean cut of this. Are you ready? Okay. We're going to do a second of silence.
So apparently there's this whole cornhole thing.
Great, there you go, you got it.
At the American Bird Expo. So apparently if you want to get... You can cornhole for a good cause at the American Bird Expo.
Aren't they all good causes, really?
Not without lube. But, sympathy cornhole.
We've done 195 of these. I can't believe somebody complained about this. That it was unscientific at some point.
Well, anyway, so I was at the Georgia Ornithological Meeting for the weekend. That's why I was not at the American Bird Expo. there were several reasons, but that was the main reason. But I'm having a good time. And somehow they started talking about the Warbler Guide, put out by Princeton University Press. Probably my most favorite bird publisher right now.
Oh, okay.
And they were making all these saucy jokes about...
so riffled, quite saucy, oh heavens.
About the Black Pole Warbler. Let that sink in. We're talking about the Black Pole Warbler and its range map.
All right.
And they were shocked that I had not noticed what its fall migration map looked like. Are you ready for this? Are you ready?
I'm ready. Lay it on me. Oh, hey, that looks like a penis.
It even has a purple head.
You know, as much as Florida looks like a penis, boy, howdy, does this actually look like a penis.
I could not believe how much it looked like a penis. That's... And it's like, come on, South America, just the tip.
No, if you were going to, and what's the worst... The worst part is, like, the map underneath it shows the rivers and everything.
I know.
So this is a really veiny bastard in the parlance of super bad.
So we need
to put as we periodically do a parental warning at the beginning.
Because of a range map that's in a scientific guide?
I think me saying a real veiny bastard is justification for parents who might be listening to this.
At this point,
kids.
People have realized that their kids should not be listening to this podcast.
I'm just saying, let's just put a little text.
Okay, so sidebar, sure. As this is being explained to me.
Sure.
So I start immediately, because I don't have the Warbler Guide on my phone. I'm someplace where I don't have internet access. I'd only have my cellular network, and I don't want to re-download my Warbler app on my cellular network.
Sure.
Because it's so big, Black Pole Warbler. Sure. Once you go Black Pole, you don't go back. So I just put on my Birdchick Facebook page, hey, does anybody have the Warbler Guide handy? Could you just put the Black Pole range map up for me? And first everybody's like, I have the Peterson, or I have this one from online. I'm like, no, that's not what I want. My God, somebody posted the actual thing in there.
Sure.
And then just the whole thing exploded.
Sure.
But as they're trying to explain to me before I got to see it on the Birdchick Facebook page, someone, and I'm not going to name names, was telling me that when they discovered it, they discovered it with David Sibley and his wife. And his wife apparently just went all out with all the jokes. And I was like, I love knowing that about David Sibley, that he's got this wife out there who can recognize a phallic range map like the rest of us. And I was like, that makes me love Sibley guides so much more. I love Sibley guides. They are the best guides you can get. But that just made me so happy. But my God, people, the Black Pole War. I'm ashamed to say that it took me this long to notice it, that someone had to point it out to me.
Now you're going to see it everywhere.
Someone else made a range map today that looked like a big vagina. I think they said it was for the palm warbler, and I was like, oh, that's really cute. So yeah, birders are dirty. The fact that they got this, and you guys, if you have the warbler guide, just go to, it's on page 179, and if you have the warbler guide app, it's the Black Pole Warbler. It is the fall migration map.
Oh, don't worry. As soon as we're done with this podcast, I'm going to post this.
I can't believe you didn't see it, because I had it on the Bird Chick page. I had it on my personal Facebook page. Yeah. Somebody tagged me in it. So that's when I came home and I was like, did you see the whole Black Pole? And you said you hadn't. I was like, oh, I'm saving that to show you at the podcast.
It's great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I love that Canada is basically...
It's real and it's fantastic.
Testicles of the Black Pole Warbler. Yeah. Anyway, Black Pole. Once you go Black Pole, you don't go back. So between that and jizz birding...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And cornhole. I've just given up. We're just... Birders are just dirty. We're dirty...
You're dirty birds, if you will.
If I will. All right. So the next thing I want to talk about, since this podcast is coming up...
Roses.
Before October 8th.
Sure.
On October 8th, if you are 62 or over, if you go to a national park or U.S. Fish and Wildlife site... that sells national parks, you can get a free lifetime pass.
Mm.
Now, there's already a great deal if you're 62 or over. There's a senior pass, and it's basically $10, and you get this pass, and it's good for as long as you are, and it gets you into any federal land that charges a fee for free. And then in some cases, it'll get you discounts on camping equipment, programs, all sorts of things. But there's going to be a senior skip day on October 8th, so you can get it for free. And it's good at whatever park while their supplies last. And if you know me, please don't send me an email asking me to get you a senior pass for free and just send it to you. So because that would be a federal offense.
So
I can't do that.
Go and get that and then go see The Intern with Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway.
What the fuck does that have to do with anything?
It's about an old guy who goes back to work as an intern in Anne Hathaway's company. He's basically a magic grandpa.
Oh. So. Actually, in some ways, I think it would be kind of fun to be older and then just go in as an intern.
Oh, sure.
Because it's like, yeah, I've seen and I've done this.
Yeah. And that's basically is like he's, you know, he's his, I presume his wife is dying. And basically he is tired of not working. He wants to work. And that's the whole thing. And it's like, and Anne Hathaway is the, you know, the young woman who's founded this company.
And she has nothing to learn from an older
dude.
Well,
no, the point... Well, I mean, the thrust of the trailer, and I'm, you know, I'm...
Wait, you haven't even seen the movie? You're just selling me on the trailer?
Yeah. Is that... So she's founded this company, but they're going public, and the investors aren't sure they want a young woman as the CEO of this company.
What the fuck is that? Nobody would say that in this day and age.
I'm willing to guess that Robert De Niro helps her through this process.
Because, of course, she needs a man to help her through this process.
It's Robert De Niro. And it, frankly,
it would be better if it were Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton would scare the hell out of me if she was trying to help me run a company, even if I was Anne Hathaway. Frankly, it looks just charming as hell. And I'm probably going to go see this movie.
Are you trying to use this as like a means to pimp your other podcasts?
I'm going to do that at the end. Don't worry.
Okay, okay.
That.
But no, now I'm mad. Now we've got... I don't want to get all feminist in your face, but I'm going to have to.
Oh, like you wouldn't take Robert De Niro's help if he offered
it totally, and I would probably sexually harass him.
Sure.
But I mean, I'm trying to think of the investors like, oh, we don't want a young woman running this. That is like gold these days.
Mm.
No, this is a and especially if it's a tech company, this is a vagina running it. Oh, we're going to get so much money in the investors with this.
I don't know. Anyway, the movie looks...
Seriously, you don't think that investors would just be all with this?
The movie looks very charming. Actually, you know what? Well, let's... I don't know if you want to talk about this. The thing that we were watching the other night was the tech company that had been founded by two women called People. Which was, you can review people that you know.
This is a terrible idea.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a terrible... So it's
I'm telling you that in the fictional world of this movie, It's a movie with Anne Hathaway, who I find incredibly charming, and Robert De Niro, who looks like he's pulling it back and being charming in this movie. And
that's, are we getting awakenings?
Kind of, yeah. It looks like he's...
Robert De Niro, or yeah. Are we getting Taxi Driver Robert De Niro?
Though I don't think we're going to see
Taxi Driver. Are we getting Analyze anyway. This Robert De Niro?
I don't think we're going to see that. It's definitely not Meet the Fockers Robert De Niro, which I am very excited about. Anyway, what were we talking about? Birds? What is
we
this
were,
podcast
and then
about?
You had to get me mad because I really don't see how there would be any investors who say, we don't want women to know.
Anyway, the point
and then
is,
it just irritates me that it has to be some old dude that...
The point is, Robert De Niro is a magic grandpa, so... And I'm interested in watching that.
That's super.
And he gets a back rub from Rene Russo as the company masseur, and apparently this gives him an erection, which everybody is excited about.
You have
in
just
in the trailer.
I can't even right now with what you've done to this podcast. I can't even.
I'm sorry. The range map penis that was. I've gone above and beyond that.
Yes, you have, because yeah. This is completely not bird related. Sure. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, maybe someone will write another complaint letter, and then I'll have a performance.
I kind of feel like those complaints are valid.
I don't disagree with that, as has been previously established.
You're trying to get fired from this podcast. Never talk about movie trailers in this podcast again, unless it's bird-related. And by bird, I mean avians. I mean, like, things that have feathers. I don't mean British vernacular for bird.
Great, so we're just going to talk about Big Year again?
I'm not...
This is the podcast where we talk about Big Year every day.
Speaking of Big Year, I'm going to be co-leading a trip with Greg Miller, who is played by Jack Black.
I think you've mentioned that once or twice.
Well, you're supposed to advertise when you're trying to sell tickets to go see. So yeah, you can go bird with me and Greg Miller in the Rio Grande Valley. It'll be a blast.
All right.
Bill won't be there. Oh my God, what if I have to start leading trips with you to get people to buy tickets?
Wait, so the guy you're advertising this won't be there?
No, he's totally going to be there.
Okay.
I was just worried that people were going to be like, oh, I would rather go with you and Bill.
What if Robert De Niro was there? And his wisdom helped you become a better bird watcher.
Blow me.
What if you actually went on a bird trip with Jack Black?
Okay, yeah. And? Your point?
I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
What if I'm sure he would be a charming fella.
My question is that do you suppose that being in that movie has inspired any sort of bird watching interest?
I think it did with Steve Martin, because if you look at his banjo music since then, and as a matter of fact, right after the movie came out, he had a whole album of, and the titles were bird related.
It's called Career Bird Alert.
Yeah, but he also, I know the Rio Grande Valley asked about when his group was going on tour, asked about having him be a musical guest at the Rio Grande Valley Bird Festival, and they couldn't do it, but they actually legit looked That's at awesome. Their schedule to see if they could do it, and they were like, we're kind of interested in doing this. So I think there is some interest with Steve Martin for sure, but I can't speak for Jack Black or the Butterscotch Stallion.
Sure.
But yeah, there's really, I can't think of anyone famous that I would want to go birding with, except maybe Daniel Craig, but then I wouldn't watch birds.
Is he a bird watcher?
I don't care.
No.
There are famous bird watchers out there.
There are.
There was actually did we talk about the last podcast? Somebody wrote an article about Jonathan Franzen.
Oh, we've talked about Mr. Franzen several times.
I know. I'm actually trying to read one of his books right now. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to read Freedom.
Okay.
That's the one that has a Cerulean Warbler on the cover.
Okay.
And I didn't realize that quite a bit of it was set in St. Paul, Minnesota. He kind of nails Minnesotans.
Good.
Yeah, and he nails a certain subset of it. But there was an article where someone went out birding with him, and they didn't refer to him as Franzen. They referred to him as Mr. Clickbait, and about some of his sexual escapades and hoping And I was like, I found it through my Google News feed because somebody went birding with Mr. Clickbait. And then I started reading. I was like, oh, you're in Central Park. You're clearly with Jonathan Franzen.
Right.
And the article is more about the author and their, I don't want to say desperation, their wish to be published. And it was just a weird article. I was like, why did you call this birding with Mr. Clickbait when he was probably showing you some really cool birds? And then I thought, how weird is it if you just want to be out bird watching and then people want to interview you? That's just, it's got to be hard to be a famous bird watcher.
It's very difficult for me.
Yeah. Especially since you don't watch birds.
Former birder of the year.
It's former just... nerf herder of the year. What was that?
I haven't heard of nerfs in quite a time. But,
you did know, it one the, time.
There's talk that I'm probably going to be birder of the year again.
So, let's just move on to one of the things. I went to the Georgia Ornithological Society meeting, and I was their keynote speaker, and it was a lot of fun. But the thing that really freaked me out was they had a lot of young birders there. And they had college students there, and there were also teenagers there. And I looked over at the president, Steve, and I was like, dude, how do you get these young people to come to an ornithological meeting? And he said part of it was that there's a college professor that brings his students there.
It was a work-release program.
They actually seemed legit interested and happy to be there. Mm. But the teenage boys, like one of them started a young birders club. The other one showed me how to find shark teeth. But it was just crazy. I talked to someone with the Audubon Club there. It's like, I'm really surprised at how many young birders there are here. And she said, well, you know, we've tried to do things to make our demographic younger. Number one, we changed the time of our meetings, which there are a lot of different Audubon meetings out there. Some of them happen on a, like a Monday night type situation.
Sure.
There are some Audubon meetings that happen at a 10 a.m. on Thursday. And I thought, you know, if you're retired or unemployed, you can go to those member meetings. Yeah. But other than that, no one else is going to those meetings. And she said, we changed our meetings to happen on Sunday afternoons in a bar. And so the bar has a room that's separate that you can book. So kind of like what we do for Birds and Beers. And she said, since then, we've had better attendance. We've definitely had younger attendance. I was like, that's a really great idea. I'm really impressed. But I just could not get over how many young people. But so I went on a couple of the field trips, and it was a good time. But it cracked me up because we were very definitely on an ornithology field trip, because there was one point where we're looking at some ducks and we're looking at some shorebirds, and then someone finds some shorebirds that are like 5 miles away, and everybody cranks their scopes and they're trying to turn all these indistinguishable peeps into white-rumped sandpipers. They're trying to separate short-billed and long-billed dowitchers from 5 miles away, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm out. I'm going to look at this giant grasshopper called an eastern lubber right now. I'm going to look for some shark teeth. Okay. So we finally get off the distant shorebirds. And then there comes a point where the whole group stops and everybody's looking at something. And I can see they're looking at something. And this was a long car train of people. And I'm just kind of hanging out at my end. And they're like, oh, we need to get Bird Chick for this one. Bird Chick, come down here. We have an Impidnax flycatcher. And I'm like, oh, geez, I'm like the last person you want for an Impidnax flycatcher. And I go to look, and I'm like,
I want to imagine there's actually a list of people you want for an Impidnax flycatcher.
There are. Ken Kaufman would be one. Pete Dunne would be another. Laura Erickson, I would think, would be far more qualified than me. Pretty much anybody's more qualified. Because here's my thing. I have been burned by Impidnax flycatchers.
Romantically.
They sent me a text saying, you and me equals frowny face. No, it's...
terrible.
It's the whole trails flycatcher thing, where it's like, they're the same size. They look identical in the fall. They sing differently. That's one way you can tell them apart. But you can do this whole formula. And there is a 50% chance that that formula will equal some value that means that you can identify the bird.
Okay.
I've talked about this formula before. Sure. Yeah. That, you know, you measure one primary feather against the other.
Right.
And so we're looking at this.
I'll take your word for it.
And I got, like, a couple of digiscope images, and I don't know what this is. And then someone's like, well, it's smaller. I think it's a least. And it's like, you know what? Least is kind of the same size as willow and alder. And then everybody's looking at the eye ring, and it's like, and so then everybody's coming at me with cameras at all different angles of the birds. I'm like, I'm just not going to call it. I just can't call it. And I feel bad, but at the same time, this is where I don't want to say giving up, but this is my
journalism.
No, it's not gotcha. I mean, if it had been, you know, if you want to argue Sharpshin and Coopersock, I will do that till the cows come home. I have been known to see a raptor that another field trip leader saw and said, oh, that's a Merlin. It's like, no, that was an exhibitor. That's mm-hmm. You know, I will argue that. But when it comes to flycatcher ID, if you can't even identify them when they're in hand, how the heck can you identify them when they're out in the field? Now, granted, there are some, like Acadian, that you can, but anyway. I was just like, oh, this is my torture.
Do we get any closure on the story? Do we find out what
I said? No,
was?
I told him, I was like, find whoever is your local flycatcher expert and ask them. But it was just fascinating to me, and that, you know, everybody really wanted an answer right there. And where I'm perfectly comfortable as a birder just saying, yeah, I don't know, we'll just let that one go. And with people who are listers, and I am definitely not saying this is wrong, you really want to know what that is. And I do enjoy arguing certain species. Like, I have a lot of fun arguing sharp shins and Cooper's hawks. But when it comes to flycatchers, I have no fun arguing that.
Do you think that your colleagues who have published field guides, in some cases multiple field guides, feel a pressure to know every bird?
If they felt a pressure to know every bird, I don't think they would
Like they could just say, I don't know, I can't tell. Like if the bird, like you said, if the bird is very far away, it's a very difficult ID. If they would just say, you know, I can't tell.
You know, there's a story that goes around about people who were out bird watching with Peterson. And a shrike popped up and nobody wanted to say what it was because it could have been a loggerhead or a northern. And those are two species that are hard to separate. And no one wanted to call it in front of Roger Torrey Peterson. So there's this long pause. And so finally, Roger Torrey Peterson said, anybody have a field guide? And then just everybody started laughing. But I think Pete Dunn said it best in his essential field guide companion, which was basically this really great idea that he had that I think, I don't know how well it sold. I'm willing to bet that it probably didn't sell as well as people would hope.
Burn.
No, because it's one of those guides where I look at it and like, yes, I want to buy that. That sounds so cool. But it's essentially a field guide with absolutely no pictures. Mm-hmm. And it is all written descriptions of birds. I bet that would be a really fun audiobook. That would be a great audiobook. I think more people would get into that book if it was an audiobook. Because Pete has a really great writing style. It's not like reading some other field guide text out there.
For those of you not in the room, I'm staring at Sharon with wide-eyed horror that people would want an audiobook of a field. Hold on a second. Let me just forward this to the chapter where...
The problem is that, you know, every now and then I was like, oh, this would be a great... There are very few birding audiobooks out there. And I'm like,
Figure.
Well, they're good, you know, but... You know, trying to get the rights to my own book for an audiobook. I talked to the publisher of For a Thousand One Secrets, and I talked to my agent, and I was like, oh, you know, some people have expressed interest in this as an audiobook. I'll totally like record it and do it. And I was like, yeah, you can have the rights to it. Are you going to make it an audiobook? No, I don't think so.
Right.
Is there any reason why I can't make it an audiobook? Is there any reason why we can't work together on this and I'll do the no. So, anyway, she told me to try again in a few years. But, okay, so when it comes to hard bird ID, Pete Dunn's book, The Essential Field Guide Companion, The Field Guide with No Photographs, says this about when it comes to the whole trails, willow, and alder flycatchers. But in the East, where willow is more like alder in all respects, the most helpful characteristic is often humility on the part of the observer. And that's kind of where I've just taken my flycatcher ID when it comes to those harder to ID ones. Like, yeah, I'm just not going to know what that one is, and that's okay.
All right. What's our next story?
Shell oil. Or should I say that like Marilyn Monroe in Something Like It Hot? Shell oil. They've halted Arctic drilling, which I find fascinating.
Well, the issue is they didn't find oil there, or they didn't find it in reasonable quantities to make it sufficiently profitable.
Which I found fascinating. Because I thought the whole thing about the Arctic was there's oodles and oodles of oil up there, and it's going to be easy to get. Maybe they're just waiting for climate change to kick in, when it'll be easier to extract.
Well, I think it's, you know, with, you know, fracking and all these, you know, communities just, you know, the oil is easy. I mean, you commented previously that you know, oil is, gasoline, rather, is very cheap around here. And it's like, yeah, it's because we're doing so much fracking. So maybe, you know, when it becomes more profitable to drill for oil in the Arctic rather than, you know,
well, part of the ways that oil companies make their money is it's not only about the oil that they're producing, it's also all of the claims that they have on producible areas. So I'm sure Shell getting in there was like, oh yeah, well, we're going to get like a ton of good investment with having this. And it's like, yeah, man. I think it's very telling that they didn't find it profitable and are getting out of there. So
no, that's,
it's fine with me that they're out of there. I don't think they need to be in there.
Right. It's okay. That's,
Yeah, I mean, that's... I don't have anything to add to this story. They found out it was not profitable, and they're not going to drill there, so...
The story was just so quiet, though. That's what I was like. I just happened to find it as, like, a sidebar somewhere. It's like, oh, Shell Oil Halt's drilling. Well, it's like, hey, Shell, why don't you just, like... And maybe they don't want to advertise that for the whole profitability with their stocks. But at the same time, it's like, for all of us, we're like, I would go up to a Shell executive and punch him on the shoulder and say, hey, thanks for not drilling in the Arctic.
No, there's no outrage to be had, so why would anyone report it? It's like, Apple recently clarified their privacy policy in clearer language so that people could understand it. And this was reported virtually nowhere because it was not something people could get upset about.
Nobody cares about privacy.
Well, they do if it's something to get upset about.
Nobody cares about privacy because if they did, they would have been so upset about how much information the NSA has on all of us. Yeah. And nobody was just like, yeah, I kind of figured they did.
All right. So, yeah, guess what? So the storyline is, company doesn't do something that isn't profitable. Well done. It wasn't like they said, oh, this is going to have, you know, this massive impact on the environment, and, you know, we've decided ethically it's not important to us to do this. It's like, oh, it's not profitable to do this. That's, as the storyline, as the famous aphorism goes, dog bites a man is not a story. Company doesn't do something that isn't profitable. Is not a story.
All right.
Well, it's time to round up these stories and head them into Hooskow.
No one knows what you're talking about. No one knows that I just accused you falsely of calling yourself a cowpoke.
All right. Do we have any other stories to talk about?
Well, cowpoke, I was going to talk about how there has been a debate in... the 5th U.S. District or Circuit Court of Appeals about the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Sure.
And basically what they're debating is, you know, so if you kill a migratory bird, you could be prosecuted under that. Well, this is saying, well, only if you intentionally killed that bird. If you accidentally killed that bird with your wind turbine or with your, you know, spoil pond from your oil field that bird shouldn't be in. If you accidentally did that, then we can't prosecute you all these millions of dollars. If this decision sticks, I mean, if this keeps going through all the courts and ends up in the Supreme Court and they say the Migratory Bird Treaty is like, well, it's only if you intentionally kill these birds. So if all these energy companies are accidentally, unintentionally killing these birds, then basically the Migratory Bird Treaty is going to be useless.
It's a thorny issue because I like the fact that when I turn on my lights, the lights come on. And in the summer, I can use my air conditioning.
And it's air conditioning is part of what keeps this marriage together. If there was no air conditioning, I would not be married.
I mean, I try to balance my outrage with my expectations of comfort. I like the fact that, you know, I don't know. I agree that, you know, these companies should take this into consideration.
My problem is... that, okay, yeah, there's going to be some accidental kills. There's going to be birds that fly into your windows, even if you've purchased the best type of windows that you possibly can.
I need to tell you a story after this.
Okay. But there are oil companies that have these ponds that that birds knowingly fly down into that they could be covering or that they could be putting some kind of cover over. They're not going to do that because they're like, we really don't care. And as long as no one's watching, we're not going to get... And we're also going to set up our property so that way bird watchers aren't going to be able to see what we're doing.
There is a lot of money to be had
and you have a lot of money to be thrown around. And you have the whole thing out west where they've made it pretty much illegal for you to document... atrocities that are happening to the... Well, they basically said, no, you can't document things that are illegally happening so that way we can prosecute these oil companies. But lawyers have found a loophole where they can argue that, yeah, the Migratory Bird Treaty says if you take these animals, you know, poaching-wise, but if you do it unintentionally, the Migratory Bird Treaty doesn't work. I have said this for years, and I love U.S. Fish and Wildlife as a... person who works for the federal government. I sympathize with a lot of what they have to do, but it is a large, unwieldy organization that has trouble keeping up with some of these regulations. And we either need... I don't know if we can modify a treaty. Do we just need to come up with a new one? But there needs to be a new way that we can come up to help regulate these things. And it was just... if everybody would just be reasonable about everything. If oil companies would just maintain their equipment.
So here is my completely unhelpful story.
All right. Is it a movie trailer?
No.
All right.
It's actually related to a bird. I was at a friend's house this weekend, and we were having I was having breakfast in the dining room, which has several large windows.
Okay, and
the windows have like the bird safe decals on them.
These windows have consistently been a problem.
Right. But they have the decals on them that is supposed to dissuade birds from flying into them. As we're sitting there having breakfast, I think it was a chickadee flies up to the window, doesn't fly into the window, but flies, it looks like basically it's trying to get into the house. It flies from one window to two other windows, and then back again, and then bonks into the window, and then flutters off. I was like, you moron.
Well, I was talking to Mark Martell when he worked for Minnesota Audubon, and he was telling me that there's a lot about windows that we don't understand, and birds react to windows in different ways.
Sure.
So in the case of our friend's house, the birds can see the reflection, and they think they should be able to fly through. So the chickadee was kind of like going from window to window to window, trying to find a way to get in. So it could see enough that there was kind of a blockage there. And then finally just kind of got frustrated and went into it. But then you also have the other thing of there are skyscrapers, like we have in downtown Minneapolis
absolutely.
And downtown St. Paul, where there are flashing lights that kind of bring the birds in. Mm-hmm. They don't even see the windows there, and they hit them.
Yeah.
And he's pointed out that one of the things that we don't know when it comes to windows. So let's just say we're trying right now to deal with our friend's window situation of the birds seeing a background behind them, reflected from behind them. So if we solve that problem, that doesn't solve the problem of skyscrapers in cities, because that's a light issue. That's also the buildings are so tall. But one of the things they said that someone I know is actually doing a study on right now, we don't know at what height on the building most birds are likely to hit. And so basically, pretty much, if you have glass in your home is a threat. Your home is as much of a threat as the Viking Stadium.
Right.
There are things you can do to minimize that. There currently isn't anything you can do to 100% prevent that.
All right. Do we have any more stories?
No. Well, we do, but I'm just tired of talking.
To me. Oh, if you could see the look I'm getting right now. All right, this is Bird Chick Podcast number 195. If you have any questions for Sharon, you can talk to her on Twitter. She is at Bird Chick. You can email her. She is Sharon at birdchick.com. And you can find her on Facebook. We will be back soon. Ta-ta.